Everyone, and thank you so much for having me here yet again. I come here for the music. I really love it. Don't have music where I come from. Do you know, it's such a luxury, isn't it, to just sit and think about yourself and to go over the journeys of your life. And I'm glad that picture is up because it reminds me of the rest of it. So Lunik's on the top and he can see over and everything's wonderful. But then when he comes down the bottom, he's in the valley and he can't see in front of him and everything feels awful. And he climbs up the hill and then he's on the top of the mountain and it feels great. And that's kind of like a story of my life, I think. But when I started looking at my faith journey, I ended up with four bits, because you've got to have four things in a sermon if you're a Baptist, and I used to be a long time ago. So I've got, the first one is God is a place and God is a family. The second one, God is a way of life. Don't like that one very much. And the third one is God is what? What is God? And the fourth one is God is everything. So come with me on a journey. So God was always in my life in some way or another. As long as I can remember, there was God. I lived in Bristol in the UK and I was five when my parents started sending us off to Sunday school. So we go to church in the morning, Sunday school in the afternoon. And then by the time I was about eight or nine, my dad was singing in the choir at night and I would go with him. So Sunday was full of God, but not really God, the church, but I called it God. At home, there was a lot of fighting going along, a lot of yelling, a lot of discomfort and uncomfortableness, and we never talked about God, except when we sat and ate a meal and then we said grace. You probably remember, know which grace we're talking about. It's the one that you can gabble really quickly and get on with your food. And when we went to bed at night, we had to say goodnight, God bless, even if we didn't feel like blessing anyone. And while it was difficult, I was also being abused by an uncle, which made it even more difficult for me. And in the midst of all this, I would escape into reading and fantasy. I would read under the sheets with a torch. Anybody else do that? Yeah. And I would fantasize. But the fantasy wasn't a very healthy fantasy, mostly. It was pretty awful when I look back on it now. But in the middle of all this, probably when I was about six or seven, there was a fantasy I had, or a vision, or a dream, or something. But I can remember sitting on a stool in my grandmother's house, looking up at the wall. There was this big wall clock on one side, the corner on the other side, and in between was God. And God said to me, I will never leave you. And I felt comforted. I had no idea what that really meant, but I felt good. I'd seen God, and God told me he would never leave me. God was a he back in those days. And I felt good. And if you asked me what God looked like, I couldn't tell you, but I knew he didn't have long white hair like in all the pictures. And it definitely wasn't Jesus. It was God, whoever or whatever God was. And then when I was 12, I decided to take myself off to a different church, sick of that Methodist church down there where we had to go three times a day. And on I went to a Baptist church, beginning in my Baptist days. And I went to the guides company there, and people were really kind to me. Not quite sure how I managed to get myself off to church. I can't imagine letting my 12-year-olds go off, but anyway, I did. And I had a really good time there, and I made friends there, and church became family. And so for me, God was family. So God was a place to go, church, and it was a place to belong, family. Oh, so I felt relieved. I could sit there and I could be there and belong. When I was 17, my parents packed up and came to Perth in Australia, and I stayed behind very stubbornly, followed 18 months later and joined them, only to discover something really strange had happened in my family. Now my family were all going to church, to a Baptist church, and my mother was baptized, and they went every week together. And I just tagged along with them. And so now I had a new family. Still God, still the church, still a new family. But it was new, it was good. And I married a guy who's was also part of that family, and we had three beautiful children, and God was still there, but really it was the church, and it was a way of life in a sense. It was a way of belonging. But then the second part came along. This is a bit, I don't like God as a way of life. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? But it really wasn't when I think back of it. A friend of ours died. It was a very close family friend, and he left a wife and two small children. Well, we knew these people fairly well, and they went to church too. But I remember sitting talking to the wife when our kids were all in bed one night, and she said how difficult life was had been for her recently because they were moving into a new house. They'd come back from the country when her husband died, and she knew this house was one that God wanted her to have. She knew it, but everything was going wrong. And I thought, how can that possibly be? Because I knew what God wanted me to do because doors opened and it happened. So that's what God wanted me to do. If it didn't happen, if the door didn't open, then it wasn't God's will. It was black and white, easy as that. But here she was saying the door was closed, but she knew God wanted her to go through it. And I could not get that. And I thought to myself, gee, I wish I had a relationship with God where you knew what God was thinking. How do you get that? Does your husband have to die? Do your kids have to die? Well, I hope not, but I really want it. And one day in desperation, I rang her up because I couldn't do it face to face. And I said to her, I really want this relationship with God that you apparently have. Mind you, she's the only person that I knew who spoke like that. I went to church all these years, and I said, I really, really want a relationship with God like that. What do I have to do? And here's the point when I was meditating on this, when I was riding it on the plane coming back from Melbourne, I'm thinking, I wish she told me another way. But maybe if she had, maybe I still would have stuffed it up. And maybe I needed to go that way. But I'll just leave it with God. All right, so she said to me, instead of saying, why don't you come over here and we'll talk about it and I'll tell you all about it, she said, why don't you go to this Bible study group? And I went, okay, anything. So I went along to the Bible study group, which was an all-women's Bible study group, and the leaders had to wear skirts and stockings and a certain type of shoes, and you had to tell you the Bible in a particular way. Off I went. This is bad for someone who's got a number one on the Enneagram. This is very bad news. I got it. Now, I've got it. I got it right. You open the Bible gives you an answer, you know what you have to do. I would have called myself, and I heard somebody talking about evangelicals. I would have called myself an evangelical, but I am sure I was actually a fundamentalist. I hope it's you in trouble, not me. Good, 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 good. That's okay then. So I now had a pattern. Everything was very black and white, good, bad. I knew what to do. I knew not what not to do. And I share this experience with those people around me, in my family, in my church. And it was a nice liberal church, and they didn't like it very much, and I didn't like them very much. And I tell you what, if I had come to your church and seen your sign at the front that said 9:30-ish, I would have said, what are they talking about? It's either 9:30 or it's not 9:30. What's this 9:30-ish? How committed are you? That was me back in those days. I don't like me back in those days very much at all. And the biggest problem for me was those were the years I was raising my children. And I regret that most of all. I do regret what I put my kids through, and they'll remind me of it from time to time. So my whole family went to England. We went to a theological college over there. We went to Papua New Guinea as missionaries and taught at a mission school. However, my kids say that was the two best years of their lives that changed them. So I did something right. When we came back from there, I was teaching at a Christian school. My husband went to theological college, trained to be a Baptist pastor. And we were still going to Baptist church. So everything was, it was not quite so bad as it had been before, but it was still pretty much that way. Still, I still wouldn't have come here with a 9:30-ish. But things started to go pear-shaped in my relationship with my husband. And in fact, things went very bad and I was very unhappy. Things were really awful. We struggled for years. Our marriage was falling apart. We tried to separate to get on together. It didn't work. Over and over again, it seems. I can't remember how many times, but I don't want to. But finally, we said, that's it. It's not going to work anymore. And during that time, I'd been depressed. I was a real mess. I'd gone into therapy in order to deal with some issues from my childhood. And I struggled. I struggled with the whole God thing. I struggled even with the church thing. And I had one verse. You know those days you had the big Bibles? Anybody else joining me? Am I on my own in this experience? Those great big study Bibles with a leather zip-up case on the pocket and the front to put things in. I was really good. But during this time, I couldn't even undo the zip. In the pocket in the front, I had a little card. I came across it fairly recently, and it was very worn out, and you could hardly hear the writing. Read the writing on the outside because it had been used so much. But the one verse that I could read day after day after day was from Isaiah 42. A bruised reed he will not break, a smouldering wick he will not snuff out. And that was the only promise that I could hang on to. Nothing else meant anything to all the wonderful stuff, you know, anything. Nothing else worked for me, just that one verse. So, on we go. We separated. I bought my own house. I got myself together, no longer depressed, working. I set myself up in practice, actually, as a counsellor in private practice. And things were going okay on the outside, but not on the inside. And I struggled with this, what do I do now with this family that's all falling apart, if it hasn't already fallen apart? The church, the God thing. And no matter how hard I worked, I could not bring together my experience of God as the rule in my life and how to live and what had happened to me in this family where I'd done all the right things and yet my whole life was falling apart. And one night when I was in the middle of all this agonizing, I had my second vision, dream. I don't know what they are, but anyway, I had another one of them. In this one, I was on top of a skyscraper, a huge skyscraper in the city. Fortunately, I couldn't see the bottom because I can't do heights. But I was standing on the top of this skyscraper, and God was in front of me saying, jump, I'll catch you. I didn't even know that God existed. Like, how can you jump? If he's not there, still a he, if he's not there, what happens? My whole life falls apart. I lose the only family that I have any contact with. However, if I don't jump and just keep on going to church, I can't do that anymore. I can't keep going not believing that there is a God. I can't do the church as a social group thing. But I'm thinking about it, oh, not sure, don't know what to do. And I turn behind me and there's a roaring fire coming towards me. I can't go back. I only had one choice and that was to jump. And so I jumped. Then I was calm. I went to sleep. Everything was calm. I woke up the next day. Life went on as usual. I kept going to church. I started reading books and listening to various different people. And I came across a book called by Joyce Huggett called Listening to God. Anyone read it? Great. Lovely book. And Joyce Huggett was promising something that I had never experienced. And she was trying to help by saying, you could do this, you could do this, you could do this. None of it meant anything to me. But I picked up on one word, which was retreat. Yes, I'll go to a retreat. I booked myself into a retreat at a Catholic retreat centre and I learned all about Francis of Assisi, but nothing about God and how to have a relationship with God. I didn't know what to do, but I knew that church wasn't doing it for me and I still wanted to find God as God is, not as I thought God was. I went to a birthday party and I met an old friend from theological college and said, how's church going? And I went, And I braved up and I gave a tiny, tiny little bit of what was going on for me. And she said, Ah, oh, you should meet up with Brian Stitt at Dayspring. Now, I had never heard those two names ever before, but something leapt inside of me. I knew that that was what I needed to do. So next Sunday, off I go to Darnella Church of Christ, which is where I knew I would find Brian Stitt. And I found Brian Stitt, and that was it. I never went back anywhere else again other than here to visit, because you've got nice music. We don't. So now I'm out of God is the way to do everything and into God is everything. It wasn't instant, it was gradual. But I started to drink in all this stuff that I was getting from spirituality and ministry. I learned about the desert fathers and mothers. I learned about all sorts of other authors I'd never heard of from Jesus' time, before Jesus' time, right through to the present time. Some of the people I thought were terrible Satanists were actually beautiful, loving Christians with a real gospel story. I learned how to pray using different methods instead of having my shopping list and going through it, or the acts, or the other program. I tried everything. I'm a one on the Enneagram. You've got to do it all. I found all sorts of things like Lectio Divina, where I get a word from God. And lo and behold, what did that remind me of? A bruised reed he will not break, a smouldering wick he will not snuff out. A Lectio, a word from God, take it out of context, give it to you, that's what it means. So that was an exciting time for me. I learned how to meditate on a passage in scripture so that I was actually there in the scripture passage. I was riding in a boat with Jesus and there was a storm and so on, all the rest of it. At the end of those passages, I heard Jesus speak to me. Jesus would say, "Okay, Sandy, so what are you going to do about this?" Or, "Come with me to this." So I heard Jesus speaking to me. I heard God speaking to me. It was all very new. And what I was discovering was that God is love, God is forgiving, and God also wants me to be loving and forgiving and accepting. And I had truly jumped off of this building into the arms of the loving God. As Paula Reinhart talks of trust as allowing yourself to fall backwards into the goodness of God. And a friend of mine puts it even more scarily, falling backwards into the black hole of God. And so many times that's exactly what it is. I don't know who or what God is, but God is there and God holds me. I don't have all the answers. Nothing fits perfectly. I don't have a pattern of prayer that works, although I'd love to. I do have an official rhythm, but I've just come back from Melbourne and I don't think I opened my rhythm book once the whole time I was there, because I was running around after three small children. I don't have it all together, but I do have an inkling of who God is. So recently I've been part of a contemplative house church. There aren't very many of us. We certainly don't sing. None of us are very... Well, actually, that's not true. Some of us are quite good at singing, and we do... we have a liturgy, which is in here. A lot of you have probably come across this. The first part is Dayspring's liturgy, daily prayers, and the last part is Pilgrim's, which is our little church. And it has five services that we have once a month. So week four, and every now and then we have a fifth one. Every week we have a different offering that we bring, not necessarily money, but the fifth one is to celebrate. So we go out to dinner or do something a bit different on that day. I have something that I wanted to share with you, but I wonder if we have time for a few people. Yeah, we have time for a few people to ask questions or make comments on what I was talking about. Feel free. Yes.
Thanks for sharing so openly. I'm just curious, might be a big question, but it sounds like you went on a journey and, like, if that's Dayspring there where you are now.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Stitt, and where you came from, that you did this great big windy thing. What's your reflection about if you could have just gone straight to Day Spring?
That's exactly what I was meaning when I was talking about could I have missed out that second stage? And the answer would have been, I don't think I could have done it. I don't know of another way I could have done this. And I think it was my number one on the Enneagram that twisted and turned it into what it became. I think if I went along to that Bible study group, I'd be out of there by the time I saw all the skirts and the stockings. So, not going there. But for me, it worked. That's where I was. Maybe that's where I needed to be held. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you for the depth of your sharing and trusting us with your story. I want to ask you, you said when God was a he, and I'm interested in that because that's something that resonates with me.
Hold on to that one.
Okay.
Is anybody else? Because I'm going to finish with your bit. Anybody else want to say anything? Yep. Make sure you remind me.
Just picking up, extending that question of Ken's and your response around development and timeliness. Richard Rohr says that a lot of young people have grown up in unbounded lives and they need a lot of boundary at the beginning and then so they can let it go later. And I look at, because I work at UWA where hundreds of young people are attracted into Christian Union, which is very conservative, biblical, has law, you know, this is the way you do it, this is what you believe, this is what it says. And there's and I'm wondering whether that just has to happen or whether... Because I don't have enough experience of young people being drawn into different or more contemplative forms of experience, and I'm wondering if you do, whether you've seen any around where young people are being attracted into something more contemplative.
They're relatively rare, young people that go this way instead of that way. And usually they've come from a difficult beginning. Well, I did, but I didn't do my difficult beginning into a Day Spring ending. I had to go through that one of the scaffolding. And I think if you look at developmental psychology, it talks about that scaffolding, that we need that scaffolding of the rigidity, if you like, or the order, certainly order, in the first part of our life. It works well for us. But the young people that I have seen who've gone the Day Spring way, wow, they are just fantastic. We have a Brian Holiday, who did most of this. His young daughter is now a mum of three kids, but she's been with us a while now, and she is an outstanding example of a young person who finds it. But then she says her dad... When I asked her about it, she said her dad brought her up with it, and he said, no, I didn't. I was... one of those evangelicals, but in reality, he did hold the contemplative life all the way through, and so it was familiar to her. Day Spring was a coming home to her, like it was to me as a rather elderly person.
Can I just say, pick up on something that Michael said? I had a friend who came and visited here with her young teenage son not so long ago, and... without breaking confidences, which I'm about to do anyway, she said, I would never bring my son here because you don't have any certainty here. What he needs is certainty. And this was a particular service where the love of Jesus was paramount, the thing that binds us together, and yet that wasn't what he needed in her mind. And she understood that she was conflicted, but her view was, he's that age, he needs certainty. And I'm saying... I'm wondering, what do you do? Do you have to get through all that crap to realise the world is crap and yet God still shines through the crap? Isn't there a way that we can communicate that God is real and loving and provides that scaffolding? How do you do that?
I like to go back to Francis of Assisi, who said, preach God everywhere you go at all times and if necessary use words. I think we just have to be, and people will come with us or not when they're ready.
Yeah.
I just thank God for the people who probably kept their mouths shut on my journey that allowed me to come to where I am.
Yeah, thank you.
But I might add, my son, who still believes in God but doesn't come to church very often, came here and came home, rang me up to say, "Mum, I found this church where they don't give you all the answers. They let you think. They actually ask you what you think. It's great. You should come."
That's lovely.
Okay? So, back to Rani's. Rani said, what about the God being male? Now, when I... Yeah, that's been part of my journey, is to unhook from God the Father, which you can imagine didn't work very well with a father who I was terrified of. But I have worked with it, I've struggled with it, and God continues to reveal God's self to me. So I now no longer use the he or she language when I'm referring to God, but I drop the he, she out altogether and just use God wherever I can. Occasionally I slip up, but I prefer to do it that way. I love the shack because the shack shows God the Father as an African-American woman. Fantastic. God is God. God is not limited to any human aspect of maleness, femaleness, but is both and much more. All right, so this is where I wanted to share just a little bit from here. On Thursday morning, I love Thursday morning prayers because we come to this particular prayer, and it's by Alistair MacLean. He says, that's he because it's Alistair, not God, "I have a secret joy in you, my God, for if you are my father, you are my mother too, and of your tenderness and healing and patience, there is no end at all." So if you can hold that thought, can we have the CD now? No? Can't. It's not working. On your phone. She's great. She's got it on her phone. I have a CD by Shana Knoll, which I first came across when I was in a retreat for survivors of child abuse. But listen to it today as it was intended to be written in the first place. So hear this CD, hopefully, as it was meant to be, from God to you, telling you what you mean to God, your father and your mother.
Thank you. Lord.